Good day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now, here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, the secret societies, and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. The Guardians of the Holy Grail show was created by me to clear up what I see to be many popular misconceptions that have been perpetrated in the mainstream media regarding secret societies, Holy Grail mysteries, Knights Templar, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. I'm hoping that through this show I can set the record straight with some hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Initiatic Societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that over the centuries has either been lost or ignored. Now, you can learn about our Gnostic Templar organization and sign up for on our mailing list and receive our monthly e-news. You can do that by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. You can also sign up for our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course while you're there, and you can become an associate member if you'd like. And there are videos to watch, books to buy. The new book on the website is my new book called World Gnosis, The Coming Gnostic Civilization. Now, this book chronologues the movement that has passed down or was passed down through the Knights Templar and the secret societies to found a one-world civilization that's based on Gnostic alchemical spirituality. This is the primal path. The movement to a one-world civilization that passed down through the Knights Templar actually started thousands of years before the Knights Templar were even in existence. It goes back as far as the legendary continents of Atlantis and Lemuria, and that's where the book actually begins. The book ends with a description of what this new Gnostic civilization will look like as we move into it, and the new spirituality that will be part of this civilization. Now, as I said, if you can purchase a copy of the book in the web store of our website at www.gnostictemplars.org. Now, during today's show, if you have any questions for our guest, feel free to call our toll-free number at 866-472-5795. Now, before we get started, I'd like to mention the France tour, or France pilgrimage rather, that I'll be leading with my friend Nancy Safford, who's a priestess of the Magdalene Mysteries and also a Knight Templar. We're leading this pilgrimage in September 20th to the 30th, corresponding to the time of the full moon and the equinox, because our intention is to have some very powerful rituals in this area, the Languedoc of southern France. This is an area that's steeped in an incredible mystery. Throughout the ages, it's been a place where the followers of the goddess have met and where they have shared their mysteries and their rites. And we believe that a lot of the wisdom of the ancient goddess tradition, as well as artifacts, hidden objects, scrolls, whatever, are still there in the Languedoc, and now is the time that they're coming to light as we move into the goddess revival around the planet. And so we're going there now because now is the time for this revival. And we're going at a very high energy time so that we can directly have the experience of the goddess and her teachings. And most recently, we found out that Henry Lincoln, author of Holy Blood, Holy Grail, will be speaking to our group, as well as Ben Hammett, the man who recently discovered a mummy in a cave in Rennes-le-Château area, which he believes could be the mummy of Mary Magdalene. We're going to be going to Rennes-le-Château, as well as Montségur, the great Cathar headquarters. We're also going to Montserrat in Spain, which is famous for its Holy Grail mysteries and its Black Madonna. Apparently, there was a lot of Templar Holy Grail activity there throughout the ages. Also, Saint Marie de la Mer, the place on the coast of France where Mary Magdalene and some of the disciples of Jesus landed after they left the Holy Land. So we're expecting it to be an amazing and groundbreaking pilgrimage. And we're actually starting to fill up pretty quickly here. So if you are interested in joining us, you might want to register soon. And you can do that by going to this website, which is www.sacredsitesjourneys.com, sacredsitesjourneys.com. So you don't want to hesitate, because I think it's going to be a popular tour, and we are filling up. And we do have a limitation. We're actually only taking 10 to 15 people at the max. It's going to be a small group, because that's what we prefer at this point. So visit the website and sign up. And if you are interested in the whole itinerary of the pilgrimage, is right there. Okay, so today we are going to be discussing a very enigmatic deity, which is known amongst the Knights Templar as Baphomet. And we're going to be speaking about Baphomet and a modern branch of the Templars that venerates Baphomet, which is known as the Order of Baphomet and Baphomet Preceptory. As many of you may know, among the Templars, Baphomet was a name for both the mummified head that the knights venerated, which we believe was the head of John the Baptist, as well as an androgynous image of the goat of Mendes that apparently the Templars venerated in their preceptories and Templar-trained masons placed outside the walls of some of the Gothic cathedrals they built. Today we're going to be discussing this latter version of Baphomet that's based on the goat of Mendes. Many of you will be familiar with its form, which was popularized by the famous 19th century esotericist Eliphas Levi. And that image now embellishes many contemporary occult and esoteric books. And actually you can find it virtually all over the internet. And it's this image that is based on the goat of Mendes and possesses both female breasts and a male phallus, so it's completely androgynous. So today's show is going to be a bit of a departure from earlier shows, because we're going to be discussing specifically the left-hand path, which is that path of gnosis and alchemy and the occult that throughout hundreds of years has been denigrated by Orthodox religion, because the leaders of Orthodox religion really haven't understood it. We believe in our organization, our temple organization, that if we are to move into an age of allowance and love throughout the planet, both the left-hand path and these Orthodox religions need to come to a place of reconciliation. They need to come to a place where they can accept each other equally. One's no better or worse than the other, and neither needs to be attacked for its beliefs or for its rituals. Okay. Now, our guest today has been intimately involved with Baphomet for some time now. He is David DePaul, the Grand Master of the Ancient Gnostic Order of the Knights of the Temple of Solomon and Baphomet Preceptory. David has been called a bridge between the initiatic societies and the occult. Since he began searching for truth at the age of 13, he has been a member of many initiatic societies, Freemasons, the Knights Templar, and the Rosicrucians, but he's also been very deeply involved with paganism, witchcraft, the occult, the Kabbalah, Gnosticism, and also Druidism. Of course, then it was in the natural course of things for him to become a member of the Order of Baphomet and eventually become a Knight Templar Grand Master of Baphomet Preceptory, which he is today. Now, the headquarters of David's order is in Georgia, where he administers Baphomet Preceptory while also organizing many pagan and Wiccan activities in the area. Now, to know more about David de Paul and the ancient Gnostic order of Knights of the Temple of Solomon and Baphomet Preceptory, you can visit their website, which is www.ancientgnosticknightstemplar.org. Okay, well, greetings, David, and welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Well, thank you very much, Grand Prior Mark. Very happy to be here. I have quite a bit to say about the notoriety that has been attached to the name Baphomet.
Okay.
And I really feel, as does Grand Prior Mark Pinkham, that the initiatic societies need to show a proper presentation of who Baphomet actually was, and who actually Baphomet can represent to us as a new age comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was very important to me to begin with actually defusing some of the myths surrounding Baphomet in the first place, and what led to Baphomet being considered in such a dark and a more negative presentation.
Well, why don't we start right from the beginning? Maybe why don't you tell us... Give a little history of Baphomet, how this deity actually ended up with the Knights Templar.
Mark, I'm ready for you. Okay, I've done a few notes, plus I'm going to be taking questions and answers and anything Mark wishes to ask to me. But I really would like to begin this with a small presentation about the myth of Baphomet. In order to properly ascertain the true facts surrounding the true mystery about what has been called Baphomet and the actual order instituted as the Order of Baphomet, we must go back and look at what Baphomet is certainly not. I want to examine first this myth surrounding this entity known as Baphomet. Baphomet is not a Masonic symbol. Baphomet was not worshipped by all Freemasons of the regular lodge. We do know that Baphomet, as a symbol of deity, has been acknowledged with ritual by many left-hand path practitioners, some of whom have been Freemasons while others have not been Freemasons. The ones that have been Freemasons that have brought about these ritual practices in working in conjunction of the Baphometic current have done this purely as a belief system of from themselves as enlightened Freemasons. We know, in fact, that Baphomet has no true connection with the pentagram. And Baphomet is not the goat of Mendes. Baphomet has sometimes been described as being related to Dionysus, Pan, or the Green Man. But this is also untrue. Although Baphomet has some attributes that could be similar to these forms of deity, we know the name Baphomet first appeared in the 12th century France, and it was mentioned in reference to the Knights Templar by the Roman Catholic Inquisition. Later, we know that in 1966, the Atheistic Church of Satan and its high priest Anton LaVey adopted the use of Baphomet, although it was not theirs to do so by legitimate heirship. Again, it was first mentioned by the Roman Catholic Inquisition. We know that there were 231 knights that were brought before the Pope's tribunal in Paris, France. And we know that out of all of them, under torture, only 12 admitted to knowing anything about the idol known as Baphomet. How much of this is pure speculation and was related while these knights were under torture is also an area of great debate. It's also interesting that Baphomet is not mentioned by King Philip as a reason for the arrest of the Knights Templar that happened on September 13, 1307. We also know that there were no papal bulls issued by Pope Clement V in which he mentions Baphomet at all. The accusations that were leveled against the Knights Templar referred only to the worship of idols, said to be either a cat or the head, or a head with three faces. This was the first time that Baphomet was associated with a head, and it's, which is said to have been prominently displayed in Templar convocations and the dark recesses of the preceptory. Baphomet had even been said to be shown as a bearded head, as well as not to have a head, or not to have a beard. Baphomet also has been depicted as an embalmed head of a man or a woman whose eyes glowed like a demon. Templar trials really say very little about this actual head, and whether this head is actually truly what later became to be known as Baphomet. We also know that the Templar trials that were recorded were brought about in reference in many many things that the Catholic Church actually had presented in her paperwork. But prior to that, we do know that during the Templar trials, that Dolomede Arblay makes reference of seeing a bearded head on more than one occasion while he was the preceptor of the Templar order at Solcy. He testified to all this October 22, 1307. Today, many writers of the occult like to associate the pentagram with Baphomet, and this is surrounded by much speculation. We know that the pentagram was found amongst many old Mason marks, as well as marks made by Knight Templars at various sacred sites that they explored. There are no other examples of this. The pentagram, we know, is actually a much older symbol than even the Knight Templar, although the Knight Templar were very familiar with it. We know that 600 years after the Knight Templar trials, a man named Flavius Levi decided to associate the pentagram with Baphomet. He was one of the first to call it the Goat of Mendez. But Baphomet is not the Goat of Mendez. The Goat of Mendez was an ancient Egyptian ram-headed god named Banda Jedget. The Catholic Inquisition in the 1300s does not appear to show any connection between Baphomet and the actual pentagram, nor, as I said earlier, was Baphomet mentioned in any great detail in the trials. This is the original myth that has brought about much notoriety from medieval times to this day. This has only led to much confusion to what Baphomet is or what Baphomet really represents. To the ancient Gnostics, Baphomet composed the actual body of the divine spirit. Because of this confusion and mystery surrounding Baphomet and the notoriety attached to the name of Baphomet, I would like to say this symbol was never associated with Satanism originally. It was a symbol of the left-hand path and self-empowerment. The direct association with Baphomet to Satan comes from the Church of Satan when they placed the head of a goat in an inverted pentagram. It then became a very popular symbol adopted by Satanism, and stolen from the Knights Templar. This symbol was borrowed by the Church of Satan from a pictorial History of Magic and the Supernatural, which was first published in London in 1664. The author Oswald Wirth and Maurice Bessie did not even identify it with Baphomet. With all this having been said about the myths surrounding Baphomet, I would like to now get to the occult truth from the inside of the Gnostic Knights Templar and Baphomet preceptory.
I'd like to ask you one question, if you don't mind, if I could interject. You've told us where Baphomet didn't come from. Can you tell us where it did come from pre-Templar times?
Yes, I can. It was the actual, I think I'm leading into that, Mark. But Baphomet is actually an androgynous symbol that was created from the dark goddess, who is the goddess who was the primal force which permeates the universe. And as we know, she was that Baphomet was an androgynous entity. But originally, the predominant gender was the dark goddess, who actually separated herself and which then gave birth to Baphomet. I'm going to be going into this in a few minutes, though, Mark.
Okay.
Aleister Crowley, the magician and Gnostic wandering bishop, remarked that Baphomet represented the original creator being, which was androgynous in nature. He called Baphomet arcane perfection. In the Book of Thoth, which was written in 1981, it was Crowley that also identified Baphomet with the troll card known as the devil. And sometimes he would say that Baphomet had the same attributes related to destruction and creation. Today it's the aim of the Gnostic Knight Templar to present Baphomet in a more easy to understand and informative interpretation. This interpretation shows Baphomet as being a transformative deity. Crowley also stated that Baphomet was the current of creativity in its most basic material form and the power of creation and manifestation. Crowley selected the name Baphomet when he became the outer head of the Order of the OTO. Going back to the name Baphomet, we know it has been derived from the Greek words bapha and metis. Together, these two words mean baptism of wisdom or a downpouring of the gnosis. This would also connect Baphomet with the transformative energy of the goddess. Noted occult writer Idris Shah stated that he thought Baphomet was an actual Arabic word, meaning the father of understanding. It could also have been derived from the Hebrew Maktoktet, Yahweh, which means the keys to the house of God. To truly understand Baphomet, we must see Baphomet as a transformative deity. This transformative deity can be taken within ourselves as an alchemical process that can transmute our being. Baphomet is in truth an androgynous deity that originally was part of the primal dark serpentess. Here, I'm going into that for you right now, Mark. This dark serpentess later became known amongst the Gnostics as the serpent on the tree and the divine Sophia. The divine Sophia was the mother goddess who separated herself from the demiurge, and then who became the mother of Baphomet, an androgynous extension of herself. Baphomet, in truth, is an image which, in our mind's eye, represents the duality of nature. This duality of nature represents to us the eternal balance. Baphomet, as a destructive, chaotic energy current, destroys all imperfection of the soul that would seek to block us in our next evolutionary step as souls seeking to return to the universal brotherhood. In seeing Baphomet as a being, a symbol of the duality of nature, we can better understand how to use forces that are known as opposites that work together to transform and change either an outlook or way of life as lived by a soul that has learned to walk in balance. This is a soul that understands that this is key to your transformation and evolutionary initiation. Baphomet in the coming world gnosis can no longer be demonized. But instead, Baphomet must be presented as a symbol of entity that was revered by the Knights Templar and later Gnostics as a symbol of the absolute. In referring to Baphomet as a symbol of the absolute, we must acknowledge Baphomet as a powerful occult symbol of deity, representing spiritual alchemy and transformation. When working the Baphometic current, this keeps the left-hand path in true balance, which all upon the path of enlightenment seek. I do not believe that Flavius Levi ever meant to present Baphomet in a negative way. I believe he intended his representation of Baphomet to be seen as a force of potency in the universe. Baphomet is the primal urge to replace the old with the new, to create and procreate, and to shine forth like the blazing star, and to live a life full of spiritual experience and growth. Baphomet shows the most physical and material aspects of the life force. Baphomet is meant to be understood as an entity, and that just he exists, and just is. Baphomet is the power that can cause life to rise up from the earth and to return to earth when it is spent. Again, Flavius Levi did not intend to represent Baphomet in a negative light, but rather as a philosophical and spiritual concept that, when understood, would bring the student of the occult great illumination about the life force which permeates the universe. This same force creates and destroys only to build and create again. Baphomet is the most ancient and revered entity, which after causing chaos brings gain and spiritual growth. It can be accurately stated that Baphomet is that primal chaos that in turn restores its own order, which would mean that it's a universal entity. In many occult traditions, Baphomet is pictured as an androgynous entity, as Grand Prior Mark so aptly stated it, which is true fact. However, Baphomet is also sometimes pictured as a beautiful naked woman who holds the blood-soaked severed head of a man. Baphomet then shows its aspect as a dark goddess, who is sometimes known as the Mistress of Earth. The severed head of the male, which she holds, is symbolic, and it alludes to the veiled allegory, which shows the true student of the occult that they must of necessity sever and free their souls and their thinking from the confines of the true destructive patriarchal religion. This is the true balance that Baphomet can and will represent. This is a much more accurate and esoteric view of Baphomet. Okay, Mark, ready for any
okay. Well, I'd like to ask you a couple questions about that. So let's say, David, if you were to summarize all these various attributes and descriptions of Baphomet into a kind of a concise sort of sentence, what is the predominant character of Baphomet?
The predominant character of Baphomet would be that Baphomet is this androgynous entity, Mark, which was birthed out of the dark goddess, who made Baphomet as an extension of herself, and that is actually an entity that is encomposing all kinds of things that come together to make it holistic and make it one. So basically, Baphomet has all these attributes, these universal powers attributed to it, that show that Baphomet, actually as an androgynous soul spirit.
Okay. So basically, if it was born out of the dark goddess, then essentially you could say it was the progeny of the dark goddess, or as many
yes,
people
indeed.
Do, it was the son of the goddess, right?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. I'm bringing that up, and now I'd like to just interject something myself. Is
sure.
Within the ancient matriarchal tradition that Baphomet seemed to have emerged from, there were two sons. Well, there was one son initially, we know, okay, in all the traditions, and then that one son divided up into two sons, and one held the creative power of the goddess, and one held the destructive power of the goddess. And so Baphomet was that second son that held the destructive power of the goddess. But back in the goddess era, it was all a goddess, and destruction was an important part of the cycle of life as creation. You couldn't have one without the other, and one was no better than the other. What I've seen is that what happened during patriarchal times is that patriarchy decided it didn't like the powers of destruction. And so it made them evil, and it made Baphomet evil.
Indeed.
Because as you can see, patriarchy, like our beloved Republican Party, doesn't like a lot of change. It likes the status quo. It likes to keep things the same. Patriarchy likes to use its technology to keep status quo. It doesn't like the change. Whereas in the left-hand path, it's known that you've got to change in order to transform. There has to be a death and has to be a rebirth. But the patriarchy has not embraced that idea. So you can still go back to the countries where the goddess tradition ended up, like India, where daily the those that want to transform, the yogis, the sadhus, daily they venerate the gods and goddesses of destruction, Lord Shiva and goddess Kali, because without them working to destroy the ego and all those things, all those toxins and those things that keep us from knowing our divine nature, we never would evolve. We never would know our divine nature, and that's what's happened with patriarchy around on the planet. They've created this deadlock that doesn't allow us to transform, because death and destruction is a bad thing, right? But in the esoteric tradition of the goddess, it's known you've got to die to be reborn. There's got to be death for there to be the new rebirth. And this is the wisdom that needs to come around again now, so that we can start seeing Baphomet in a whole nother light. That is part of the goddess tradition. That's part of the goddess ideology, the goddess perspective, is that it holds the destructive power of the goddess, which is a good thing because it leads you to God. Okay, so I just wanted to interject that.
Yes, you're exactly right, Grand Prior Mark. When they demonized Baphomet, they created in the spirituality of this planet a great imbalance. And this imbalance that was brought about by the patriarchal thinking has been what has brought about all these spiritual battles that are going on in the world today, because people haven't been enlightened and they have not been properly informed or educated of these things, Mark. Very, very true. In anything in nature and in life, if we create an imbalance, things do not flow smoothly, and that current will get blocked, and evolutionary growth for this planet is stunted and stymied. And it will not allow to be a free flow of the underground stream, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So very, very definitely, when they demonized Baphomet, they did create a powerful imbalance. Because in nature, all things are balanced. The Dark Goddess is the eternal return. Many times in the ancient cultures, the Dark Goddess is depicted as a high priestess who is her representative, wearing on her face the paint, where half of her face is black and half of her face is white. And it does refer to what Grand Prior Mark is speaking about. This eternal balance has to be there. There cannot be light without dark. There cannot be day without night.
Right. And you're going to find, if you look at Levi's depiction of Baphomet, the foundation is this dark goat, which some have associated with the goat of Mendes.
Yes, it is.
But anyway, it's dark because there's a destructive aspect to the darkness, because Baphomet, as it moves through you as alchemical transformative energy, it destroys everything. It keeps you from knowing your divine nature. So there's the darkness. It doesn't mean evil, as we're made to believe by patriarchy. It means something else. The darkness means you move through the darkness to get to the light. You move through destruction to get to the new rebirth.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And I really do have to say that, you know, we have gone so far away from the transformative, actually healing power that Baphomet actually has on the soul, on the enlightened soul, because we have allowed or saw so many misrepresentations going on in the occult world. And these, you know, unfortunately, some of these people that went out there and they borrowed the Baphomet symbol, or they, you know, associated it with evil or the devil, they really didn't understand really what Baphomet is as a manifestation, which actually is that powerful. It can be more described as a powerful force. And it will create change, which can be destructive, mm-hmm. in order for something else to come out of it positive.
I think that another way of making it more understandable for people and the listeners is that simply Baphomet is another name for that alchemical transformative force that transforms a person into a god or a goddess, which has been called Kundalini, Bharaka, the Holy Spirit, many different names, but it all means the same thing. And it's the power that when someone's ready to know themselves as God incarnate, Spirit incarnate, becomes awakened, becomes alive, becomes active, and then slowly but surely takes away or destroys all those things that keep the person from knowing their true divinity, their true divine nature. And this is why the knowledge of Baphomet always came later in a person's path. And you find this in India today. They recommend that someone on the spiritual path, they follow the orthodox Vedic tradition for some time before they're ready to move on to the higher teachings. They follow the right-hand path in order to prepare for the left-hand path. The right-hand path has its importance. It has its value because it teaches discrimination, for example. It teaches discipline. But part of it is that you, during the right-hand path, you're thinking of God someplace outside yourself. Now, when you're ready to know God within yourself, then you move to the left-hand path, and that's when you start trying to see everything as one. You're not discriminating so much as this is good, this is bad. Everything is just energy. Everything is just one. Everything is just God. And consequently, there can be rituals that happen in the left-hand path that you wouldn't do in the right-hand path, because they're very taboo, drinking wine, eating meat, this sort of thing. But you're trying to see everything as one again. Everything is being the same. And so you start doing these things that were taboo in the right-hand path. They're not in the left-hand path now. But if you haven't gone through the right-hand path and develop a certain amount of discipline, then what happens is you fall into addictive patterns through the left-hand path. And this is precisely what's happened to people like Crowley. They went directly into the left-hand path because they had such a resistance for the right-hand path. They went directly in the left-hand path, and many of them left this plane as addicts. You know, that was their downfall. They became hardcore addicts. And so what we're seeing now and what we believe is for the new spirituality in the new era is to combine the two together, combine the right-hand path with the left-hand path. One comes before the other. One prepares one for the other. One is not any better than the other. When they're properly followed, the right-hand path should precede the left-hand path, and the left-hand path then will take you to spirit. It's on the left-hand path that you meet Baphomet, you meet that power of transformation, you get the initiation, you get the Kundalini activation, and that takes you to God.
Yes, it does.
And so this is where we are right now, is trying to reinterpret re-educate people about Baphomet and this what they consider to be this dark path, which has always been the path of the mysteries. It has always been the path that takes you to God. It hasn't been the orthodoxy. We know that doesn't work. We've seen it for the last 2,000 years. It doesn't lead anywhere. In fact, thanks to orthodoxy, patriarchal orthodoxy, and this planet, we haven't evolved much in the last 2,000 years, period. They've kept the status quo very well, right? By controlling our minds and controlling everything through technology. But now we have the chance to move beyond that. Now we have a chance to know God within ourselves through following the left-hand path. So it's not something to be denigrated. It's something to be embraced, something to be valued, something to be revered, this left-hand path. And this is the way we need to start seeing it.
Yes, indeed. And unfortunately, the presentation that many have placed Baphomet out there and on the Internet and other places, in books and places like that, you're right, Mark, that they really aren't. You're seeing a symbol that looks a little bit more on the wicked side, but actually, if you really look at even F. Livius Levi's Sabbatic Goat or his form of Baphomet, and you will notice that to the trained initiate, you look at it a second time, and you see beyond just this wicked-looking image or an evil-looking image of a what appears to be a dark aspect. And if you look beyond that and you actually look in the symbology, the duality of the horns, the illumination on the crown on Baphomet's head, the pentagram in his forehead representing the five elements, air, earth, fire, water, and spirit, the caduceus and the intertwined serpents representing both the male and female aspects of the Kundalini and the brotherhood of the serpent in ancient Atlantis. All these symbols, you see Baphomet sitting on the earth, you see him showing the signs with his arms, as above, so below. If you can become a student of symbology and you can read beyond what the normal eye sees and realize why we have always said that we have veiled an allegory and illustrated with symbols. And if you can look beyond F. Livius Levi's version of Baphomet and replace your thinking with a new consciousness, and then look at Baphomet again, you will notice these things that I'm telling you right now. And if you look really close, you'll see all this symbology that reflects one thing. Balance. A duality of nature. A blending of the and balance of the light and dark. This is really what Baphomet represents.
Well, you're totally right. And I'd like to expand on that a little bit. According to one esoteric cosmology, at the very beginning of time, there was the infinite spirit that came to a point of creation and became this androgynous being, this androgynous dragon, which was essentially Baphomet. You can call it the dark goddess, you can call it the son of the goddess, whatever you want, but it was androgynous. It had male and female energies united within it. It was pure energy. And as it went, as it contracted and it became this universe, as energy became densified, then what happened is that the male, the female, the positive and negative within this primal dragon separated, you know, to become day and night, to become all polarities in order to keep the universe in balance. So in order to revive Baphomet, to recreate Baphomet, you've got to reunite the male, the female, the light, the dark, the positive, the negative. But how you can do that is right within your own body. Because they say in the East, they say your body is a reflection of the universe. You have both the male and the female. You've got Baphomet as two snakes that slither down your spine like the Caduceus, like the Eden and the Bagalanades, or the Ren and the Du Channels of the Chinese philosophy. Okay, so you take those two serpents and you unite them together at the base of your spine. Unite the positive and negative at the base of your spine, and when you do that, you recreate, you revive, you rejuvenate Baphomet. And then he moves through you, moves through all your subtle meridians. He moves directly through the center one, the Sushumna, the top of the head, opens up all your chakras. He reveals to you all your powers. He transforms and moves all the blockages out of you, destroys them, burns them up in the fire of transformation, and then it takes you back to spirit, that conscious of spirit. So essentially, succinctly said, you know, you have Baphomet at the beginning that divides to become the male-female or the two serpents or the two dragons that within your own body can come together again to resurrect Baphomet. Will rise up through you and do all the work of transforming you and taking you to spirit.
Indeed. And that later came to be called, you know, what Baphomet, the word actually meant, was the baptism of that spiritual
right,
fire.
Exactly. Baptism of wisdom, and that's what he is. I mean, he is a baptism. I mean, the true baptism, if we study the path of the Mandeans and John the Baptist, the true baptism was an awakening of that alchemical force. It wasn't a physical bath. It was a baptism via the subtle energy that moves through the water.
Right, a cleansing of the spirit.
Exactly. You know, it was an awakening. It was an awakening of that energy, of that subtle transformative energy. And so this is a true baptism. And the true baptism happens at the beginning of your spiritual path to God, to knowing yourself as spirit incarnate. And then the true baptism is an awakening of that energy.
Yes, it is.
So let me ask you a couple things,
sure.
David. Within your perceptory, tell me something about your rites or rituals, perhaps rituals that you do in order to venerate Baphomet. You know, what goes on there?
Well, we actually do kiss Baphomet. Now, those things you hear about us are true. We do kiss Baphomet, and for all the reasons that we've just actually explained who Baphomet really is to us. There are a lot more things that we do besides kissing Baphomet, of course. We actually have 13 officers in the preceptory, consisting of a grand inspectress of the order, a grand master, a grand commander, a grand prior, a preceptor, a chancellor, a seneschal, a standard bearer, and we have the four hellos, which is a cup bearer, a sword bearer, a pentacle bearer, and a wand bearer. With all this, we also reenact the Grail Mysteries. We acknowledge the Magdalene as a personification of the divine Sophia. So we honor her. We do blessings to her. We do invocations to her. We do also invoke and evoke the true energy of Baphomet to create change in our lives as Knight Templars in the positive sense. We work quite a few Grail Mysteries. We have actually been able to do much actual, what we would call, magical current in our preceptory meetings, where the magic is never missing. One of the things I have noticed, you know, in my upbringing in the Freemasons and in other esoteric lodges, that the magic's been missing, Mark. And we really feel that you can't dissect yourself from that magic, that the magic has to stay in a preceptory meeting, and these things have to be there. We have to acknowledge the goddess in these meetings.
Right. Well, the magic was always part of the goddess tradition. We lost it with patriarchy, of course.
Yes, and we cannot go away from that. We cannot make a Templar preceptory a patriarchal preceptory. It cannot be. In our preceptory, even a Grand Master such as myself is a officer and a knight, just like everybody. No higher officer than another. There's just officers that have more knowledge than others. And our purpose is to instruct others in the right way. So we have quite a bit of pageantry, Mark, and ritual. We do processions. We do the whole thing. We also bring our knights in under the swords that are and the whole preceptory is encircled around the knight in full regalia. So we do quite a bit of transferences of energy, as I said. And there is an actual goddess energy that is transferred from the Grand Inspectress, who actually is the personification and representation of the goddess in our preceptory meetings. So there is actually a transference from the Sophia to each one of our knights. Also, I'd like to mention that besides keeping magic in our rituals, we have no differentiation between gender. You are a Knight Templar, whether you are a woman or a man. Because again, we know that Baphomet was an androgynous entity. So as an order, to be a real Gnostic Knight Templar order, and to have a real succession, and to be doing things that are really traditional as Knights Templar, then we must leave. We can't leave any of these things out. We got to make sure that they are there, and they remain as our ancient landmarks and things that are immovable jewels, so to speak.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that I think what you're doing is great, especially in acknowledging, recognizing, and having present both the male and female energies. I mean, you know, you can see in a Freemasonic lodge they're trying to generate this power of Baphomet. To some degree, they're able to do it. They create the checkerboard floor, and they have, you know, the Jacob and Boaz pillars. Yep, to try to create that balance of the polarity and bring it together. However, there's no females. It doesn't make any sense. If you had females there, it'd be a lot easier, and you'd complete that work of uniting the male-female energies together, and you would be able to create a much, much stronger energy.
Yeah, although we have a lot of illuminated Freemasons in the regular lodge, Mark, I would have to say the Co-Masonic Order is probably closer to what it really should have been or should be. And I think, you know, we have lost a lot of magic because of that. And even regular Freemasonry, which I find this very odd, because it does acknowledge that we do believe in the goddess. Because we refer to Freemasonry, Mark, as she.
Mm-hmm.
And we
well,
do
it come out of the goddess tradition.
Yes. And we call Freemasonry she, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me why we would admit women.
Exactly. Right.
I guess maybe I'm becoming more of a universal soul in my older age than I was when I was younger, you know, and I didn't see these things at an early age, Mark. But, you know, with maturity, with initiation comes maturity. And it does open your third eye, and it will enlighten you. And the Gnosis is what it's all about. This Gnosis mm-hmm. is supposed to be a transferal of energy that brings you into initiation, and then it makes that initiation take fruitation, where you're becoming. And I think as the more you move up and you become, in your initiation, Mark, I think you see these things that are missing. And
well, you know, certainly before the patriarchal age, in all the ceremonies and rituals and rites of the spiritual traditions, it was all male and female combined. It wasn't just one or the other. I mean,
yes,
you know,
it's
been this patriarchal infiltration into the initiatic societies that's made them all solidly male.
Now, we did have, Mark, we had solar and lunar mysteries. And, yes, the lunar mysteries were predominantly female, and the solar mysteries were predominantly male. But it isn't, and there was a separation in those two mysteries. There were things that were taught to the males, and there were things that were taught to the women. However, what's being missed is the fact that there was an agricultural wheel of the year that people followed. And back in these, in the olden days, in the old times, or the pagan cultures, I should say, everything actually revolved around our earth. The planting and the harvesting was the most, an agricultural cycle was the most important thing, the seasons, and how we honored our ancestors and how we treated our Mother Earth. And all these things were now missing. But in the ancient cultures, we did come together, males and females, as a one big family, one tribe, one family, and we worshiped the old ways. We kept these traditions alive that were handed down. And we practice shamanistic practices that were meant to bring us to the other world quicker.
And I'd like to interject that the time of the mysteries within these indigenous tribes was, of course, during the winter, when, you know, you couldn't be outside working. You were inside because it was a time of death and destruction and cold. And that's when the mysteries were taught. So, you know, and so... And the mysteries were about death and destruction. So if you're to eschew that principle of death and destruction, you've lost all the mysteries.
You are greatly right, Mark. Because actually, in all the initiatic societies, as well as all the ancient cultures, the rites that we believed in were birth, death, and rebirth. And you'll see this recurring theme over and over. And you will see a lord who dedicates himself to the lady or to the goddess. And you'll see that sometimes that lord was the lord of the grain, or he was the god of the wood. But he was her consort. And he was there to compliment her, again, showing us balance, just as the Native Americans have showed us here in our own country. We have to walk in balance, Mark. That's what's been missing. And we cannot turn our backs on the goddess.
And absolutely. You know, by turning our backs on the goddess, as I said, we don't evolve. You know, she holds the key to evolution.
That's it.
And we turn our back on Sophia, which we've done. We turn our back on our own gnosis, our own intuitive wisdom about who and what we are.
We see the ancients have presented this duality, Mark, in almost all of our symbology. The Masonic compass and square. The compass is the goddess, and the square is the goddess, and the compass is the god, the universal father and an earth mother. All of it's in our symbology. The G didn't just represent the great architect of the universe; it was saying Gnostic. It was saying both God and goddess, one,
right.
As one.
Right.
So it's all in our symbology. And it's the symbology of the ancients is telling us this, Mark. The interlaced triangles, the Star of David. The male and female, they are together within an eternal circle. They're interlaced. They're showing us all of our ancient symbology from the ancient cultures to this day. It's showing us the way. It's only us that can stop ourselves from gaining the knowledge and moving forward in our personal initiations and to become enlightened and to know really what life's about.
The pentagram, especially in the inverted pentagram, is attracted a lot of notoriety, obviously.
Yes, it has.
But if you go into you go into the Freemasonic lodges, you'll see both the upright and the inverted pentagram, and a lot of Freemasonic symbology, see the inverted pentagram. Why? Because Freemasonry was originally founded on this Gnostic alchemical path from the goddess. It was founded on the path of Kundalini activation, transformation. It was Chiron, the master builder, working through you to rebuild Solomon's temple. You know, if you go back even further than that, the five-pointed star was the symbol of Venus, and Venus has both the morning and the evening appearance. And it was said in the ancient times that those are the two sons of the goddess. The Venus was the queen of heaven, and her two sons were the morning and evening stars, right? And so they were two parts of the goddess. And so the upright five-pointed star was the sun that held the power of creation. The inverted star was the sun that held the power of destruction. Now, one wasn't any better than the other, and in fact, you know, it was more the sun that held the power of destruction that could take you to God. He was the master of the mysteries, right? And so there's nothing negative about it. In fact, if you look at an inverted pentagram, you should see freedom, because it represents the destructive, transformative power of the god of the goddess. It's going to take you to your self knowledge of who and what you really are.
That's why it is pointing downward to our earthly existence. The right side of pentagram is showing that our souls within ourselves is acknowledging that we know we're part of the universe. We're all made of particles and specks of the universe.
Well, it's nothing evil, right? It's
never
nothing
has
evil
been,
whatsoever.
Mark.
And in fact, John Baptist was very much involved with the goddess
pentagram.
Path himself, and the power of transformation, power of destruction. One of his main headquarters, if you will, is Amiens Cathedral in northern France. And if you go in there, all the symbology is related to John the Baptist. And you look up high onto the ceiling, and there's this gigantic inverted five-pointed star. I love it, you know? And, of course, most people are Christians that go in there, and they immediately, I'm sure, they make the cross, you know, in front of them to protect themselves from all evil. But it's perfect, because that inverted five-pointed star actually personifies or embodies, shall I say, or symbolizes that true energy of what John the Baptist himself personified, you know?
Yes, indeed. And again, these presentations are not left there for us to see if they weren't meant to be seen by us in the first place. All it is different levels of evolution of the soul. And many souls are still on those lower levels of evolution, while others are a little bit higher up the ladder, and we may be able to read through the read and understand the symbology much better than they do. But again, you know, we want the world to realize that the coming world gnosis is for all. And there will be leadership and people that are knowledgeable that don't have an ulterior motive of being dominant over others or making people slaves or being your masters. Instead, what our job is to help you up that pyramid. It's kind of like the level of Adeptus Exemptus on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. Well, an Adeptus Exemptus is a soul that can evolve back to God if it so chooses, but it also has an option. Adeptus Exemptus can stay where it is on the Tree of Life to help other souls up. And this is what we're trying to say about the coming world gnosis. I think this is where we're going with this, Mark. Is that we want to re-educate people to understand, you know, these things that have been considered evil, dark, the devil. These are just demonized things. These were made by our critics, people that just didn't like us to begin with. And most of why they don't like us is one word that is associated with darkness, ignorance. And all that means is we have to take responsibility. We have to make a difference in our planet. We have to be those who are the way showers and light bearers. And we have to show them by our example, not by lip service, not by words, but by our example. And if this planet learns to do that, Mark, we're going to be in balance again. And we will enter the universal brotherhood like we have been in the past. And that's why we're being watched so much from the universe now.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and in terms of what's happening right now, see, we're so indoctrinated with this patriarchal understanding and perspective of abhorring change and newness. And so consequently, we're in total fear about what's coming now, because there has to be some changes on the planet if we're going to move into a new era. There's got to be physical crises that are happening, they're happening around the world, and there's going to be all kinds of stuff going on. But if we adopt the original goddess perspective, that all this change and destruction leads to something greater, something better, something new, then we're going to welcome it rather than try to avoid it and run into our holes and scream bloody murder when the changes start happening. If we can change our attitude and welcome these changes from Mother Nature, from the universe, because these changes are taking us to our new era, to a new consciousness, if we can do that, we'll get through these times much, much easier.
I agree. I agree, Mark. And again, it is the responsibility of all true Gnostic Knight Templar to educate and to enlighten, and above all, to tell the occult truth about something. And that's what we will always do. We're not going to lie to people out there in the listening world, Mark. I'm not going to lie to them and say Baphomet's a destructive evil force that the Christians have made. It's a destructive force that creates, yes. It's not evil. It's a symbol of deity. And, you know, we're not going to lie to people. We're going to tell people the truth. If they want to learn, we want to tell them the truth. We want them to be able to learn. And ignorance is the worst thing that this planet has. It's the real darkness on this planet. And the real evil on this planet is people that aren't. It's because people. It's not this planet. It's the people on this planet that aren't willing to open their minds to a wider acceptance and tolerance of all faiths, Christian or not. And believe me, in my ancestry, Mark, I have ancestors that were persecuted and they were murdered by the patriarchal religion for what they believed in. And I do have some resentment in the back of my soul that I have a hard time letting go of because of that. But guess what? I have done it. Because it starts in me before anything else. It has to start within. And it can go to that Gnostic terminology of knowing thyself.
The bottom line, I think, David, is that what's going to change the world is not us imposing our ideology on patriarchy or the Orthodox religions or any of that. It's going to be working from within. As the goddess awakens, she awakens within all of us. And when she awakens within us, she awakens our love. She awakens our sense of camaraderie, our sense of feeling like we're brothers and sisters of each other. And it awakens within us that desire to unite with the higher power, to become one with the entire cosmos, to know ourselves, what we're all about. So essentially, she's guiding the ship, and she's going to do the whole work. I mean, we can assist her and continually be open to the guidance and the directive she gives us now. But in the end, it's her working through everybody else that is going to truly lead us into the new era.
This is very true. And you know what? John Lennon pegged it on the head 100% with the song Imagine. And just the other night, I caught Andy Rooney on 60 Minutes, I believe it was. Just caught a glance of it, but it was something that I was meant to see. I saw Andy Rooney talking about the destruction on this earth and war and the problems that are going on in this planet. And he said, you know, I think we need a new religion. And you know what? I jumped up off that couch and I applauded. I screamed and yelled. My whole family thought I was crazy, Mark. But I had to show what I felt about that statement, because that's an enlightened man.
I would just say one more thing, that we don't need another religion. What we need is pure spirituality. We need the primal path, and not calling it anything but the path of transformation leading to God.
Right. That's what he was actually saying. You know, right. He didn't say the word spirituality, Mark. I agree with you on that. I don't like using the word religion myself. I use spirituality.
Because religions have separated us, obviously. We
religion
don't need
has separated everything.
Right.
Well,
we're in agreement, of course, and I hope that some of you that have been listening today are also in agreement with Grandmaster David and myself, and we welcome the opportunity to hear from any of you. I have a Facebook page. I think, David, you do also, right?
Yes, I do.
And they can get in touch with you through your website, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And those of you that weren't online when I gave out his website before, it's www.ancientgnosticknightstemplar.org, and everything about David and his organization is there. And so anyway, great having you on the show today, David. I think that this is a pivotal show, starting to see the left-hand path in a whole another light, which it needs to be. The patriarchy has given it a lot of negative connotations, and we need to change that if we are going to get on the path of transformation and renewal now. And it's one that we've left for the last 2,000 years, and now it's time to get back on it. And it's the goddess and the goddess path that is going to be behind that transformation. So thank you again, David, and hopefully we'll have you on again, and in a future time we'll talk more about this left-hand path and the Baphomet Preceptory.
I'd love to, Mark. I'd love to. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate everybody listening, and I'd like to say something else real quick in closing. I won't make it very long, but Mark does have a new book out, which is called The Coming World Gnosis. The Coming Gnostic Civilization, World Gnosis, is actually the title, and The Coming Gnostic Civilization is the subtitle for the book. I've been honored and able, luckily, the last few days, to be able to read this book myself personally, and I just finished it this morning, a little bit before our show here. And I would highly recommend this book to anybody that can get their hands on it, as well as any of Mark's other books. Another little plug I might say is they have talked me into writing some books as well, so be on the lookout for those coming up too.
Okay.
In the next few years. All right,
thanks
thank
again,
you, Brother
David.
Mark. Grand Prior Mark, I appreciate it. If anybody needs me, I'm here to serve.
Okay, thank you again, David.
Thank you, Mark.
Next week's show, we have Tracy Twyman, who is an expert on Merovingians and the holy bloodline of Jesus and Mary and a lot of the activities around Rennes-le-Château and the Languedoc region. And that's going to be next week's show, so I know you're not going to want to miss that. And so I'll meet you here, same time, same place, and always remember that the true Holy Grail, the grail that we're always looking for, is always right within our own hearts. Bye for now.